Folks, to episode 3513 of the Survival Podcast. Today we're going to do a show that I've done different versions of over the years. It's something I'll always come back to until the problem solves, and I'll probably die before I stop doing it. We're going to talk about the last free generation, and I want to be real clear coming out of the gate here. I am talking about my generation. I am talking about Gen X and maybe bleeding into the first half of the millennial generation. Remember, millennials are now almost 40 years old. The older millennials are in their late 30s to very early 40s. They're not the kids they were when we started picking on them. What was it in this show 16 years ago? So this is also not going to be, hey, Gen X is badass, right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about us, the people. And I'm going to be, I'm going to explain real quick to you. When I say the last free generation, we weren't free. We were just a hell of a lot freer than people are now. We knew enough freedom to know what freedom looked like. And I don't think a kid that's 12 to 14 years old today knows the freedom that a 12 to 14 year old Gen Xer did in the mid 80s. I just don't. And, you know, you can tell me I'm wrong about that or whatever, but what you're going to have to do is show me proof. Show me proof, and I don't think you'll be able to, because I grew up then, and I would bet the majority, that doesn't mean the vast majority, but I bet the majority of this audience is between 40 and 80. I know I got some young guys listening to me, young gals listening to me, and thank you so much. You know, if you're in your early 20s, and I start talking about 1984, and you're like, boy, he's old. Yeah, you'll be old too soon, but hang with me, because what I'm talking about is the way society has conditioned people to accept fractional slavery and how they, you see, this is all you have to do if you want to enslave a society. You get them to accept 1% slavery. They need to be a slave just 1% of the time. You need to, you know, give up this freedom. This is not a law that says don't steal Billy's food or don't kick Sandra out of her house. This is a law that actually restricts your liberty, even though you haven't harmed anybody. And you get people to give up 1%. And how do you do it? You say it's for your safety. Think of the children and other nonsense. And then once you get 1%, all you have to do is get 2%. And once you 2%, you get 3%. It's called incrementalism. And government is great at it. A lot of people say the left is great at incrementalism. That's just because the left is more of a purist toward government than the right. The right loves government too. The left just really loves government. I mean, it's a degree thing. Like on the actual political spectrum, your current version of, you know, Democrat and Republican, liberal, conservative, left, right, they're about an inch apart on the spectrum, and they're both very, very far toward the authoritarian side of the spectrum, and that's where we're at. But the left just likes to march a little quicker in that direction. They just love giving up their rights to Big Daddy government. We're going to talk about how that happened. We're going to define liberty versus liberty and freedom today in a way that if you haven't heard me talk about the subject in the past, you may have never heard. It's something that I've had a lot of, you know, in-person, face-to-face conversations when we're talking about liberty and freedom. And when I express it the way I'm going to give it to you today, I've seen light bulbs, like, turn on in heads. I've also seen, like, that kind of, like, confused, angry, I don't know what you call it. Looks like you got to go to the bathroom. Like you're trying to divide 387 by 13 in your head look for a couple seconds, and then the light bulb moment when I explain freedom the way that I'm going to explain it today. We're going to talk about how our children have been programmed to accept control. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about some things that you may have never realized about the book/movie by George Orwell, 1984. I think I've heard people, you know, reference that book more in the last 4 years than I heard in the rest of my life up to 4 years ago. I really have. Like, that's gotten on the radar for people who would have never even known what it was about. I think there's tons of people out there referencing it. They have the basic understanding of what the storyline is, but they've never read it or seen one of the movies. But, like, they're aware of it now. But there's some things in that book that you probably really didn't think of, especially if you did read it. Or the movie, if you watch the movie, especially the original version of the movie, it's so dank. And like the whole feeling is like gray everywhere all the time. The sun never shines. It's like a dungeon, and you could just almost, when you watch that movie, you can almost smell mold. And again, the light just never fully comes up. Well, maybe that's not exactly what totalitarianism and dystopia really looks like. Then we're going to end with, well, what do we do about it? Because I'm not the guy that likes to go, look at the problem there and look at the problem. The problem, 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 problem. Pay attention to me. Like, if you're going to point to problems and you have no solutions, I'm not really interested in what you have to say about the problem either. Because the whole point of what we do in lifestyle design is to either fix problems or design our lives around problems. So we'll talk about some ways we can do that. And then I'm going to end with a question that's as much for you as it is for me. Is there any hope? Are we the last free generation? And I would say, like, there's different ways we use the term generation. We use the term generation like a demographer, marketing group, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, Gen X, Boomers, Greatest Generation. And then there's also kind of the generation of people that were alive in this larger 50-year time spread. If you're alive right now, you're part of Gen X, even if you're a Y, or even if you're a millennial, or even if you're an aging boomer. And the reason you are is because you're alive with us. Like, the boomers knew more freedom than Gen X did, honestly, prior to our time. I don't know if that's true completely, because we were the latchkey kids, so mom went to work, and so mom wasn't even there to keep an eye on us. So we really had freedom. But in other ways, the boomers knew more freedom than we did. And so we're all alive together. There's going to come a time when the people alive will have never known someone in real life that lived through this period that we're going to kind of discuss as an anchor point to today's discussion. With that, let me remind you guys real quick. While I'm doing this, if you have a talking point for me or a question, would you please, if you're watching the live stream, this is who this applies to. If you're on the audio and you go, well, I don't understand, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. If you're on the live stream of the video, make sure you type the word question in all caps, or anything else you want to use to identify the first word or two in all caps. Especially when I'm on my own, that helps me see it with my one decent eye and star it for conversation or answer at the end. All right, with that, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is Above Phone. You know, you can replace big tech with your own private ecosystem. And if you can use a smartphone, you can use an Above Phone. If you can use an iPhone or an Android that was pre-programmed by your masters at Google to do what they tell it to do, then you can use an Above Phone. There's really not much difference to it, except for what you're actually using. So you have access to a private app store, a private ecosystem of apps, with apps that are open source and do not spy on you. They do not collect your information. And we also prevent, with Above Phone, the carrier and the phone manufacturer, in this case, these are all Android phones, from collecting that data as well. But what if you need to use an app that just, you can't use an app from the private ecosystem? You have an app that you really feel that you need to use. You put it in jail. How about putting them in jail for a change? What does that mean? That means you put your app that's from the Google Play Store into this little jail, and it can only do what it does when you open the jail and let it out, let's say, on work release. So I'll put you to work, I'll deal with your crap while you're doing it, and then I'll put you back in jail. How about that? You can take back your tech with Above Phone. They have new stuff coming on. I really need to get Romero Romani back on to talk about some of their new laptops and things like that as well. And you also can get a discount, $75, any of the phones available at Above Phone if you're an MSB member. Next up today, Anton's Land of Biltong. Guys, I'll confess something to you. I actually have the faint taste of this stuff still in the background right now. I got a little soda water with me and helps my throat, but I almost really don't want to drink it because I don't want that to go away. Now, it's not the Biltong. It's the Dewar's dry sausages, because my Biltong shipment came Wednesday last week, and all the Biltong is gone. I still have a few Dewar's left. This stuff, I am absolutely addicted to it. You need to give it a try. His tagline is life's too short for average. I've met Anton in real life. He's been here to my place. The guy is a good dude. He built this business right in the middle of the COVIDs. He's an example of the solution. Instead of letting life tell him what he couldn't do, he went out and built a business right amid the disaster. That's the kind of person you want to do business with. And He does do a discount for MSB members as well. And I'll be reaching out to him. Hopefully I'll get to that this week about attending the fall workshop. And of course, I'm going to suggest he do some kind of a biltong sausage tasting or something like that. Because I'm sure if he also brings like a whole bunch of product, he'll probably move a bunch of it at that event too. It'll be worth his time to come. Anyway, so let's get into this. Again, the last free generation, and I really want to be clear, there is this whole thing going on amid like online influencers, especially on the whole TikTok world right now, Gen X stuff and using it for basically attention harvesting and stuff like that. I'm not doing that. That's why Gen X is not in the title. This is not glorifying any generation. This is not picking on any generation. This is just where we are in history. And again, I'm not talking about the resiliency of Gen X that we can live on hose water and cook our own food. But what I am telling you is the reason we lived on hose water and cooked our own food is because we had freedom. We didn't drink water out of the hose because nobody's mom would give us water. That's just the mythology they throw at you. We did it because we were outside playing. The hose was right there and we didn't want to go in. That's just where we were at. And I think that it's not like our DNA was different. We haven't changed DNA. Well, maybe with some of the, you know, but overall, we haven't as humans changed our DNA between 1985 and 2024. We haven't. It looks that way. But what you see in our young people today is a natural conditioning of obedience based on the way society has changed. And the way that society has basically convinced people that liberty is privilege rather than liberty is a right. And we have convinced young people especially that if we just take more of your freedoms away, you'll be happier. If we just steal from this other group of people who originally stole from your right of inheritance, even though you're going to inherit all their shit when they die, that's weird, your life will be better. The boomers took everything. We should take it back from them for you. And any other form of class warfare they can come up with, it's a natural way that you end up. When we get into a situation, I don't know about you guys, when I was in high school, I would say 30 to 40% of my teachers were men, and they were like actual men that acted like men. I would say it was much more weighted toward female teachers in like grade school, but by high school, like a lot of my teachers were male. I don't think that's the case anymore, and a lot of the men are a little bit effeminate. So boys aren't getting kind of that male backbone encouragement growing up. They're also not getting the male, like a man is much tougher on certain types of discipline than a woman. And I'm not talking about hitting kids or anything. I'm just saying, like, you know full well, if you're my age, if you grew up in this time, that when you walk into a classroom, with a few exceptions, some really tough women, like the teacher you weren't going to get away with bullshit with were the dudes. They were going to slap that shit right back into place. So we've lost the male influence. Divorce was a big thing in my time, but it wasn't as like commonplace as it is today. So we have we're living in a place where most young men are growing up and they're supposed to be being trained to be leaders in society. I know some people will get triggered by that, but I'm sorry. I think men and women just lead in different ways and you need both types of leadership. And if you take away either one, you get into really bad problems. And when you confuse the thing and the women start acting like men and the men start acting like women, you really screw things up. And I think that we have moved more toward that than anything else. So then all this stuff just cascades. It just cascades. And if you ask somebody right now, what is freedom? What is liberty? A lot of people, including people that grew up with it, don't know what it is. And because you were programmed too, I was programmed too. You ever remember Hulk Hogan and who was his biggest enemies in the WWF? The Iron Sheik, the Middle East. And what was his name? The Russian guy? I can't think of his name now. It just went out of my head. Vladimir something, I thought his name was, right? But they had the Russian and the Sheik, right? They were the ultimate enemy of Hulk Hogan with the flag. Right? That was part of your programming, guys. Now, do I think the WWF was like, let's join in on the state level program? No, they capitalized on the concept. It was just straight up like, hey, this'll sell well. But it was a reflection of the time that we were in. We were conditioned to believe these people are good and these people are bad, and you have to do things because of that, including giving up your liberty. And but what is liberty? What is freedom? See, and the problem with this question is people try to answer a very complex question with a very simple answer. Being able to do whatever you want is freedom and liberty. Okay? So can I go and, let's see, Blue Bus is here and so is Dark Horse. Can I go punch Blue Bus in the face and steal Dark Horse's stuff so I have liberty and freedom? And they'd say no, because you're infringing on somebody else's liberty. Very astute. Good answer. So then liberty and freedom is not the ability to do anything I want all the time. It's the ability to do anything that I want, okay, within the boundaries of not infringing upon the rights of others. Now, as soon as we get there, we start to say, well, wait a minute then. What if the way that we are protecting ourselves directly infringes upon the rights of others? The law itself infringes on the rights of people and their ability to do something that harms no one. Gun control would be an example. Like, I understand that it's not legal for me to take my gun and stick it in some guy's face and take his stuff. But me owning the gun and that thing are not connected. I bet you 95% or more that people that will listen to this show for more than 5 minutes because they found it by accident and didn't realize what it was own a gun. And I bet you almost none of you have ever stuck a gun in somebody's face. And I bet you the few of you that may have actually put a gun in somebody's face either were an on-duty officer, a soldier in the military being shot at, or an armed citizen who was being attacked or assaulted in some way, and you used it appropriately. And so the ownership of the thing should not be anything that could be infringed upon if we have a world of liberty, but it still doesn't tell us what liberty is. Maybe some people in this live chat, or you know, we'll hear the show eventually after it's published, would say, I don't care about owning a gun. Well, then liberty for you is not the ability to own a gun, is it? Some of you who are very carnivorous might say liberty is the ability to choose your own food, and among that food, I want to make sure I can always choose meat. But if you're a vegetarian, then the ability to eat meat is not freedom for you. Okay? I realize that it's freedom, but it's not freedom for you. You see, the problem is as we collapse freedom around people, as long as we don't push too hard on their pain points, as long as, like, let's say 8 out of 10 freedoms that get pushed on are the ones they don't really care about, they don't notice it. That's your frog in the boiling pot, even though that analogy is a lie and it's bullshit. If you put a frog in water, I don't care how slowly you turn the water up, as it becomes uncomfortable, that frog will try to get out. It's a lie. But that's the real frog in the boiling water. It's not just the changes are slow. It's I'm going to make 10 changes over the next 4 years that infringe on your liberty, but you only care about 2 of them, so it doesn't seem that bad. And it's because we don't know what freedom is. So finally, what is freedom? You can only define freedom for yourself. You can't define it for anybody else. No matter how much you love your children, you can't really define freedom for them. You can't really define freedom for your wife or your husband, your best friend, your brother, your sister. You can't do it, let alone me, who you don't even know other than through my podcast, or I for you that maybe only know you by an internet handle, don't even know your real name, don't even know where you're from, just see you in my thing. If somebody said, oh, builder of castles, yeah, I know who you're talking about, right? But I don't really know. How could I possibly define freedom for builder of castles here in the live chat? I don't even know his first name. I don't even know if he's a he. He might be a she. She might be a they, them. Who the hell knows, right? But I will give he or she is the two legitimate things that builder could be. I'm guessing male based on personality of comment and things like that and the name, but I don't know. So the only way that builder of castles can really define freedom is what freedom looks like for him. Because there are people that would think, you know, the whole you'll own nothing, be happy, live in the pot and eat the bugs is freedom. Why? Because they like that. They would define their life. I don't want to have to pay bills. Right? See, the problem with that is, well, who's going to do it for you? If you can figure out some way to make it happen by voluntary agreement, God bless you. Don't pay bills and go live in your pot and eat the bugs. But when you have to steal from somebody else, now you're violating the freedom of others. So the macro of what freedom and liberty are, we can define. Freedom and liberty are the ability to act as you choose until the point where you begin to infringe on the freedom and liberty of others. And then no one should bother you until you do that, and then that should be reconciled as close as possible to the point of impact. And what I mean by that is, if you don't like my backyard and you live next door to me, instead of carrying on me to the police, you should at least tell me about it so we see if we can work it out first, because we might be able to work it out. We might be able to work it out. I got a feeling my neighbor doesn't like some of the stuff we do over here. He just put in a great big privacy fence. You know why? I don't really know exactly why, but I do know that it was one of his few options. He could have talked to me, and if there was a problem, we could have done something. I'm totally happy now. I got a privacy fence for free. I would have split the privacy fence, but he didn't ask. But he didn't have any other option. But I'm unincorporated. I'm covered by the sheriff's department. If you call up the sheriff's department and say, hey, this guy has a giant hippie party once a year, and there's people all over there, you know, chanting and dancing or whatever, even though that's not what's going on, the sheriff would have said, yes, so the three houses the other direction for you is a giant wedding venue, and they get drunk off their ass there all the time. We don't have anything to say about that. Why do we care about this guy's hippie party? There's no option. So there had to be a resolution at the personal level. That's what happens when you get the state out of the way. But what you do is you come in and you offer a different solution. Call us, dial 911, and we'll fix it for you. Right? So we really need to understand that government has always been the enemy of freedom. And it's always been marketed as the way to preserve and protect freedom. It's always been marketed as it's a monster, but we need a monster to fight the other side's monster. That's always the way that it's been. It's never not been the case. If you go back and you look at history and you find people that were truly free, they were always people that were independent of anything that we would call a city today. I know the Native Americans, the freest people that ever lived. Well, there was free people everywhere in the world at one point. Like, the way that Native Americans that we think of classically living is not how all the Native Americans lived before we got here at all. Some of the settlements looked a hell of a lot more like Rome than they did like the crying Indian, the Great Plains, and the Buffalo, and General Custer, right? Way more like Rome than that. But we did have that everywhere in the world. We did have that in Europe, in Africa, in Australia, right? There were indigenous Aboriginal people everywhere at one point in time. But the big thing they didn't have were giant cities. Cities are where you get people disassociated enough with the conflict of the nation state itself to allow it. So if you go back in time and you say, were there major long campaign wars in the North and South American continents before European settlement, there's a lot of people that go, no, the Indians were all peaceful. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. But the sustained campaign conflicts, if you go back and research history, will be mostly in what's today Mexico, Central America, and Northern South America, down into like Peru, Ecuador, especially on the coast and areas like that, where we had empires like the Inca, the Olmec, the Aztec, the Mexia, etc. And all the shit that we have today, the conspiring bodies of government and the restriction upon people was all there. But if you move up into, let's say, the northeastern United States of today, and you look at like the League of Five Nations and the Great Law of Peace and all, much more egalitarian, much more liberated society. Well, one of the big reasons is if you went to war, you went to war. You go to war. You don't get to sit at home, kicking back, drinking a lemonade or a beer, watching CNN and seeing smart bombs go down and pretending that war's a video game, right? But even in those larger empires where one would march upon the other, well, the cities are all here, and unless you were the one being marched on and you were convinced that, you know, your guys did a better sacrifice to the sun, then you were going to win, and it was easy to let wars go on in much longer, deadly ways. And when we get war, then we get all kinds of ways to take away people's rights and freedoms. And most of the young people today have grown up with it, but they've now had it on steroids. They've now had it on steroids. And what I mean by that is when we combine today's technology, communication, and propaganda apparatuses, they almost have no chance. It's like taking all the propaganda they shoved at you and me through the, you know, five stations we had. Then we got cable. We had 99 stations, a little slide box, right? Take all that and then put it on like double super ultra maximum steroids. Because now they've got it going into their brains from the schools like we never had. I'm telling you, I had some teachers that said things in my day that they would absolutely get fired today for, and they were things that were actually accurate historically, maybe opinions about modern news or the media, and they were mostly in the world of history and science, and they were also always an English teacher, springs to mind as well, and like shop teachers, they were also almost all men. So those men have been largely pushed out of education. Their ability to speak that way has largely been suppressed. They're afraid of everything. Everything's been feminized, and so they've got it coming from the school system. They got it coming out of the boxes that we buy them that they carry around. For we always say the same thing, we get a young kid a phone. Well, that way they can call home if they need me. I'll be able to get to them. But you know what the kid's going to do with it. They're going to plug into this giant world of TikTok and online video games and chats and all their friends, and this propaganda is just constantly shoved at them. So what that's done is our folks today, they do not value privacy for shit. They don't value privacy at all. I mean, zero value of privacy. They don't care. Do you know why it doesn't look like us Gen Xers were complete morons when we were in our teens and early 20s? Because everybody didn't have a phone with a camera on it and a way to share images. That's it. If that all existed when I was 16, 17 years old, there'd be images floating around me. I had to be going, yeah, I did that. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's not a deep fake. That's 16-year-old Jack. Yep, that's him. And we just didn't have that. So we were, you know, my point is, kids aren't idiots because today they've been made into idiots. Kids are idiots because we're all idiots when we're kids. We all do stupid things. And these poor kids have lived in a point where everything's recorded, everything, and sometimes very maliciously shared by their friends to make them look bad, sometimes out of context, sometimes on a fake, right? It's just the way that it's done. And this is just things that we wouldn't have done back then. Like, I don't know about you, but like when I was a kid, if someone knew something in confidence and they went and told somebody else, they got punched in the mouth. Like it wasn't like you didn't think about, and I'm not even talking about like ratting out to your parents or a teacher. I'm talking about like if you had some kind of like thing going on with another person and you confided in your friend and he went to them behind your back, like whack, right in the bean, man. We had respect for not just our privacy, but the privacy of others. Once you take privacy away, then you give the government and you give media and you give tech the ability to basically build these giant, and they have them on all of us, giant virtual dossiers. And that means you always have a leverage point that you can go push on in the future with anybody. I mean, look, we had people fired in recent years because somebody dug up a tweet that person made, you know, when they were in high school, you know, 13 years ago, and they're not the same person, but that won't go away, and yet people still just keep puking out their entire lives online, including people actually saying negative things about themselves that aren't true, because that makes the good better, right? Like authors have been caught with this. They write this book, and it starts out with how downtrodden they were as a kid and how they were like a drug addict or whatever, and they recovered and they built this amazing life. And when you go back and look at their life, it's nowhere near that exciting. You know, instead of a drug addict that maybe when they were in high school, they smoked a few doobies, who didn't, right? To grow up poor meant that some of the kids in their school had a few nicer things than they did, but they were well off by anybody's definition. Like, people do that to embellish. Well, people are doing it online. And so they're actually building dossiers against themselves that are worse than reality. And so that's going on. And that makes them easy to control. They've also been taught a whole bunch of things that don't make any sense. And we were taught this as well, but I don't think we believed it. And one was we had to respect people and give them see them as having authority because of their titles or their credentials rather than their actions. So you must listen to this person because they have a master's degree in this subject, for instance. Or this person is morally right because they're a cop. Or you just take the other, like, well, but a lot of them hate cops. Yes. So this person is morally wrong because they're a cop. It's just as powerful. They don't care what side they sort you to, as long as they sort you to one side of the dichotomy. I mean, it's you think about it, I see things all the time, right? Cop ends up in a situation, he's trying to do his best. Not that they're not agents of the state, not that I don't have problems with that, but they're doing the best they can. Somebody's a complete asshole to him. Cop ends up knocking the dude, like knocking his ass out and then handcuffing him. And people go, oh my God, police brutality. And I look at it and go, you know what? If you did that to me, I'd knock you the fuck out too. And most of the people talking shit, right, if they have any courage, would have done the same thing. Like, that's how I judge a cop. What would I do in his place as a civilian? Well, I'd do everything right up to cuffing him, but that's his job, to cuff him after that happened, right? So you do that stuff to me, I'm going to knock you out too. But that's because I see people as people, and I see respect as respect. And I say that if you want me to follow you or listen to you or obey something you say, and obey doesn't necessarily mean like bow down and kiss your ass, but you say I should do X and I end up doing X, if you want that from me, you have to earn that. And our youngest generation has been trained to do one of two things that are absolutely the opposite of that is. And that is, if it meets your worldview, then it is absolute and you must do it, and anybody that does it is bad. And if it doesn't meet your worldview, then it's to be discarded and they must be bad. And that you have people, I don't care what side you take, you're instantly under control of other people when you start thinking that way. Because now all I have to do is manipulate the way that you receive the information. We have also allowed our kids, and many of them now are young adults. In fact, there's probably still some people around, you know, Gen Xers that are in this place. Lifetime debt for something that's a depreciating value. And that, of course, is education. We have systematically placed generations, multiple generations, and the plan is to just keep going, into completely unserviceable debt. And student loan debt is only one piece of it. I do believe it is one of the more insidious things. Because let me tell you what doesn't happen. You don't go through school and then college and your entire life with your mom, your dad, your grandma, your uncle, every teacher you have, the TV set, every politician you ever hear speak, everybody that's respected telling you, it's really important when you get older that you buy a really nice shiny car. You get certain subliminal messages of that, but you don't get overt multi-trillion dollar market campaign to buy a shiny car. You choose to buy a shiny car. That's, and again, they, of course it's marketed and sold, but you choose to do that. Massive amounts, and I mean massive amounts of stolen taxpayer money have been used for the last 40 years with one message. Every child must go to college. And we have done so to such a level that the value of the degree has declined while the cost of the degree has increased. And so what that means is kids are going to school and they always try to backpedal and say, well, it's the life experience and it's the breadth of understanding. It's not just a direct investment. But that's bullshit because the kid is told, if you want a future, you need to go to college and don't worry about what it costs. When you get out, you'll have a much better job that pays you better, and you'll be able to pay back the loan, and financially you'll be better off. So that is the case that is made. You don't tell a 16-year-old they need to go to college for the breadth of experience in life, right? And a broader understanding of the situation of man in the world. That is not the marketing campaign. So these kids are tossed into this world of debt. It can't even be discharged with bankruptcy. And do you think they will vote for a geriatric moron because he will forgive their debt? Of course they would. They're so stupid. No. No, they're not. They're a product of the society that created them. And if you're sitting there looking down at them because you're older than them, you helped do it. So did I. No matter how much we spoke out, no matter how much we tried to help, we're a part of the whole system that got us to where we are today. That's why we need to speak out against it. We are taught that degrees equal education. Well, how educated is this person? Oh, yes, 3 degrees. In what? Gender studies, bitterness studies, and how to annoy people? I mean, like, what is your degree in? And are you talking about something your degree's in? Do you even understand what your degree is? Can you pronounce your degree? I know that sounds ridiculous, but I remember a commercial during the, you know, we're toward the end of the downturn. Coming out of the downturn under Obama, so probably around 2011, that was in Arkansas when we were living up there. And it was this lady that they did like the human interest story on. And she's like, I work hard. I got 2 degrees. I still can't find a job. I've been out day after day after day trying to find a job. I got a master's degree in everything, and I can't even find a job. She couldn't say the word master's properly. A master's degree. I'm not picking on anybody. I'm just saying if, and I bet you, based on the whole context, there was a lot of public funds that went to make sure this person got their master's degree. Okay? I'm just saying if you've gone and done the work necessary to have, you know, I don't know what her master's was in, but let's say it's business administration, have an MBA, you should be able to pronounce the word master's, or I doubt the value of your education. So when we start teaching people to value things like credentials above knowledge, actual knowledge, because that you have the knowledge is more important than how you obtained it. You end up with people very easy to control, because if they want to do anything meaningful, well, what do? They go get an education, which just means a credential in a thing, and they don't even know if they like it, and they fund it with massive crippling debt. You couldn't write a script to better end up where we are. A group of young people who think they're really smart, who actually can do very little when it comes to life skills, that are deeply in debt and believe it to be somebody else's fault. I don't want you to think about that again. You get a group of young people who are old enough to do things, to be valuable in the world, and to actually like cause problems, to burn shit down, to break stuff. We're talking about young adults here. You get a group of them. You convince them that they're extremely smart, even though they're very specialized in the thing that they are smart in, and they maybe aren't even that smart in that, but they have no life skills, no flexibility, no resiliency whatsoever. They're in crippling debt, crippling lifelong debt they can see no way out of. They see no way to have what their parents had, and they're told your parents and grandparents' generation stole it all, and that's why you don't have it. Now, you want a society, you want to drive in a specific direction, and you want to use the latest generation to do it, because that's always the best way to get it done. Because there, the 24-year-old is going to be 10 years from now the 34-year-old, and the 34-year-old, who's part of this spoiled group, is going to be the 44-year-old, and that entire group of individuals coming through will control the vast majority of everything in 10 years. So that's where you put the lever, and you make as much change as you can today, and then you go back and you do it again, and you keep ratcheting it based on these like decade slides. So that next generation will pick up right at where you left the last one off and do all your crazy shit. And you wonder how we got to a place where we don't know there's been a man and a woman. You can't get there overnight. There was some crazy lunatic bullshit in the 70s. I mean, it really was. But you could not have made this argument to anybody who wouldn't have laughed in your face in 1974 versus 2024, that a man and a woman are interchangeable. That we should use the term front hole instead of vagina so we don't offend it. I mean, the most radical feminist in 1974 would have either spit on you or laughed at you for saying something so stupid. But here we are. And that's what it is. It's like a 10-year leverage point, because they know that next block will be running things and making decisions. And that's why you're sitting here and you're 50, 55, somewhere in that range like me. You go, how did we lose control? Because we were in control 10 years ago. And we're really not anymore. We think we are. Sometimes we have better titles. But, you know, any military person who was ever a sergeant or a captain or whatever knows, like, they call it the E4 mafia in the Army, right? Your working leaders really control actual direction. You think you do, but you have to get their buy-in. And they're always working behind the scenes for what they actually want. And then they'll become that middle management, that E6, that E7. You'll go on to be a first sergeant or a sergeant major, and you'll think you have more control, but no, you don't. See, the left figured this out way faster than the right did. Way faster. And that's why they leverage the school system, especially high school and college, because that works perfect to flip into that next decade. And they have patience, they take their time, and they get that job done for all the incompetence we think they show us. They've been also made overly comfortable. I mean, The fact that 14-year-olds stop on the way to high school to get avocado toast today, I didn't know what an avocado was when I was 14. I really didn't. Like, they're, like, kids today are so comfortable. Again, I'm not picking on them. If we would have been offered this much comfort in 1984, we would have taken it. Don't look down on the generation. Look down on the people doing it. But it's a combination of, like, this teacup treatment that kids are given today. Like, again, when I was 13, 14 years old, we just took off. Honestly, when I was 10 years old, we just took off. But especially by the time you're, like, young teens, and left all day. Came back, as long as you showed up by the time you were supposed to come back or made a phone call from a friend's house, right? You, no one worried. Today, a kid is gone for 3 seconds, and we're calling, like, a code Adam on it. And I understand that we're scared, but the world really is not a much more dangerous place than it was in 1985. When I was a kid in Jacksonville, Florida, Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole were running around literally right in Jacksonville, right where I lived. They occasionally actually bought gas from my father, who owned a service station and tire shop. If you don't know who Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole were, look it up. And then you'll know why when you tell me, but it's different today. I don't believe you. As far as the risks and dangers that are out there for kids. We have made them incredibly comfortable, and we have taught them to value protection over vigilance. And this may be the thing we've done that's crippled them the most. So, again, 80s kids, stranger danger talk, right? Don't take candy from strangers. Don't get in their car. If an adult approaches a group of kids and no one knows who that adult is, and he starts talking about stuff, it's probably something not right. You need to come tell an adult right away. You stay together. You don't let anybody go in it with them. We were taught that. That's why we were the last 3 generations, because we knew what vigilance was. We did our own versions of it, even in our stupidity. We used to do bush parties, right? We wanted to drink. Somebody would score beer, usually me, because I come from a degenerate family. I'll be honest about it. And you go off in the woods and you drink. Well, some of the kids, like, were not walking distance from home. Somebody's going to have to drive. We were 16, 17 years old. We had designated drivers. It usually meant, like, he gets one beer at the very beginning, and he doesn't get another one for the rest of the whole time. And it's like, if you're going to be out there for 3 or 4 hours, one beer, you're going to be all right. But we even disciplined ourselves to do that because we knew, like, we weren't just going to screw up. Like, somebody could die, somebody could get hurt. We would screw it up for everybody. We were kind of at a stalemate with local PD and authorities to where they were like, there's nothing else for kids to do here. So as long as they're not causing trouble, they kind of left us alone. As long as there were no fights, people weren't burning things down, people weren't getting drunk and smashing cars into buildings, they just kind of like, yeah, they're out there, but as long as they clean up and leave a little, and we would break that. We actually knew that. I had an ecology teacher in high school who literally told us, guys, if you can take full cans of beer into the woods, you can carry empty ones out. Her name was Miss Kirsten, and we made a deal with her. We used to call her Ma. Ma Kirsten, right? And we made a deal with her. We said, like, is it okay if we leave the cans? She's like, nah. I'm like, hold on, Ma. Hold on. We leave the cans that night. We put them all in, like, a box. And then we come back the next day and we take them away. She's like, well, yeah, that's okay. But why? It's like, because when you're carrying the empties out, you're more likely to get caught by the cops, right? Like, this is how we grew up. So we had this vigilance both from authority and for good things for each other. That's gone. That doesn't exist. I know some of you are going to tell me my kid's exactly like you were. And I know my son, you know, even though he's young, for that experience, I gave him as much of it as I could, as much leeway as I could with some direction and hopefully make a few less mistakes than me. But I'm talking about the macro, the average. This was not abnormal. The way I'm describing, like, I didn't grow up in some unique unicorn way. Like, if you lived anywhere outside of a big city, and I'm sure some degree, some of us still in the cities, but once you were outside the big city, this is just how kids grew up. We had this natural, like, okay, authority exists for a reason. We didn't hate cops, but we didn't like them when they were interfering with us, so we knew to guard against getting caught. But at the same time, like, I guarantee you, any of us, if we would have saw, like, Officer Jack Harley, who was the one cop for the township that I was a resident of, if he had been in any serious trouble or problem, we would have all ran to help him. It was just a different way of seeing things. And it's gone. And not valuing vigilance and instead valuing protection just screws everything up. So if you took an 80s kid and brought them forward in time, and you showed them something like, you know, X or TikTok or whatever, and somebody made a comment they didn't like, they'd be like, "Oh, fuck that dick. I'd kick his ass." Well, yeah, he lives in, you know, say what, Neo, so you're not going to ever see him. Well, what do I do about it? You can block him. Oh, fuck, block. And he would go on, right? Because that's a type of vigilance. That's being responsible for your own happiness. I don't want to see this asshole. I don't have to see this asshole. I don't have a problem with him. What do you want today? I want him banned. I want him canceled. I got to get rid of him. We have freaking people out trying to get TV shows that are literally 40 years old in reruns canceled because they're problematic. I know you don't think vigilance, right, versus protection is the same, but what it is shifting the responsibility from the individual to authority. And so when you get a whole generation of people that want authority to do for them what they refuse to do themselves, again, you're writing a perfect script here. If I sat down, you know, we talk about in permaculture all the time, and something I always try to steer people toward understanding when they say, well, what do I do as far as growing my own food or something, right? You have strategy, techniques, and tactics. And most people want to start with techniques and a little bit of tactics. A technique is what you do, and a tactic is where, when, and how you implement the thing that you do, okay? But the strategy is what you're trying to achieve. And if you actually want to design a system, you have to start with the macro strategy. If you don't, no matter how good you are at techniques and tactics, you use the wrong ones in the wrong place at the wrong time, and you won't get what you really want, and then you'll be frustrated and angry. And it's hard to rein people back in to think that way. But if I sat down and we said, well, what is the strategy? And the strategy, it's 1985, and the strategy was, in 30 to 40 years, I want the current generation of, let's say, 15 to 35 years old to be extremely malleable and controllable by the state. This is what you would do. This is how you would get there. This is the techniques and the tactics of implementation that led to where we are. And it's so perfect, it's hard for me to believe that it ain't at least partly by design. That some level of that has not happened, at least, and maybe been adjusted for along the way. I think some of this stuff is natural consequence. But when the people that are in power and the people that want more power see natural consequence, it's like a martial art thing. Once the opponent starts to go forward because you pushed on this place, even though you don't specifically know this technique, you know, if I keep pushing, I'm going to keep getting a similar reaction to a point. And again, these people are smarter than we give them credit for when it comes to what they really want. See, the problem is you think that their strategy is, I want to make this place better. And you just disagree with their technique and tactic as to how you get there. But that's not their strategy. And I'm not talking left versus right here. Left and right have the same strategy. I want more control and power. And if you start judging what they're doing based on that, right? And what I mean by that is if you start judging their actions based on does this improve their position as to having more power and setting up more power for the state in the future, all of a sudden when you look at something even as incompetent as the Biden administration, it looks very competent. See, this is the pattern. If you do not define strategy first for yourself in your own life, and therefore you pick the wrong tactics and techniques, when you look at what somebody else is doing, you won't ask that question. What is their strategy? What are they actually trying to do? So you'll judge them as incompetent, and they're overjoyed. Your government loves that you think they're incompetent. They really do. They like it. Individual politicians, you can use some level of shame to manipulate them. But overall, your government loves that you think it's incompetent. Because then you focus on all this shit over here in the wrong lens. And they keep moving the needle the way they want it to go, and you don't even know it. And you think they can't possibly be doing that. They're too stupid. And they laugh at you. They laugh at you. And we also have taught our kids that, you know, I'm going to say straight up, there is prejudice in the world. There is racism in the world, and it comes in many different directions, and it's always been with us, and sadly, it probably always will. But I'll also tell you, as someone that grew up at the time I did, it was worse not so long ago. Jacksonville, Florida in the 80s was I'm going to tell you, there were times if you were the wrong color in the wrong place, it was dangerous even at school. And I mean the wrong place by you're in the wrong hallway at the wrong point in time. And it went both directions. And it was a black and white thing. There was almost an ambivalence to any other ethnicity. It was a black, white, pure divide. And there was a lot of animosity. There was a lot of slurs slung around. There was an undertone of it. It was the South. It was, you know, not that long since, you know, civil rights movement and all that. In fact, we were way closer to the civil rights movement than we are to the time I'm talking about from now. That's another, like, you get different time perspectives as you age. And one of the reasons that young people are easy to control is they have a very limited time perspective. It's not a criticism. It's just reality. You've only had so much time to develop time perspective in. So 10 years seems like a long time when you're 20. The journey from 20 to 30 seems like forever. I'll tell you what, man, the journey from 40 to 50 goes really fast. Really fast. And then I'm 50, and you're like, well, I'm actually 52. Holy, where are the other 2 years at? I'm serious. And so that time perspective is part of this. But we've been taught now that since that racism was real, and since some remnants of it remain, that the prejudice against one group of people equals privilege for another. Okay? And that's really stupid. That's a real stupid way to describe the situation, which makes it perfect if your goal is to make people more dependent on the state and more willing to believe in things that are not believable. Let me explain it in a very – see, I think the more simple you bring things with analogy, the easier it becomes to understand why they either track or they do not track. So two guys are riding bicycles, one on each side of the street. There's no prohibition against riding bicycles. The two people are the same color. They're riding the same bike at the same speed. They're behaving exactly the same way. There's two people standing on corners that they're about to pass. As the one guy goes by, the guy waves at him, says, "Hey, how you doing, Tim?" And the other guy, who's also named Tim, so it's as equal as possible. The guy standing on the corner there shoves Tim off his bike and kicks him in the face, right? Or Tom, right? So Tim and Tom. And we say Tim has privilege. Tim has privilege because he didn't get pushed over and kicked in the face. Tom is a victim. True. He is a victim, right? And therefore, Tom deserves what Tim has so they can be equal. There's different ways you would solve this problem here, but here's the, again, most basic analogy. There are people, you give them that scenario, they're probably going to all say the same thing mostly anyway. But they'll change, right? But there's people who would say, well, the jerk that pushed him over and kicked him, like something bad should happen to him to disincentivize other people from doing it. In other words, this was wrong. So the way to correct the problem is to remedy the wrong, to fix the wrong. It would not be to go track down Tim, take his bike away and give it to Tom, because Tim's bike got damaged when it fell over. But this is what we're doing with all this DEI shit today. It's exactly that. This group of people has been treated unfairly historically, and they still are today, no matter how true that is. There's only two possible solutions. One is drag the people you call privileged down, and the minute you call them privileged, that's the scenario you set up. We need to disadvantage those who are doing well, so that we can equate the people who are doing poorly. Or you say, all the bad shit being done to this group of people just because of who they are needs to cease. Well, most of it has more than ceased. In fact, it's been moved the other direction. If you are a person of color trying to get into college today, it is easier than being a white kid. And if you're a white kid, it's easier than being an Asian kid. I'm sorry if you don't like it. It's true. You can look up the information if you want to. But we're still playing this narrative of the privileged class. 1980s, you ask somebody who a privileged person was, they would have told you like a multimillionaire. It didn't even work for it. There was still a respect for blue-collar millionaires. Like, what about Uncle Stephen? He's a millionaire. He worked his ass off for it. Somehow he did it with four ex-wives in a state without alimony. Is Stefan going to have all the money? No, they meant like the stodgy, giant cigar-smoking, cartoonish million. When being a upper-level millionaire was equivalent to being a billionaire at the time, right? That's who they saw. Privileged today, you're white, you're privileged. You know, I didn't notice a lot of my privilege growing up poor in a coal town in central Pennsylvania. Or as a scared white kid at the seventh grade center, Douglas Anderson, surrounded by black kids that didn't like me because I was white in Jacksonville, Florida, before I moved up there. My life actually got better when I moved up there for reasons like that. I didn't notice a lot of privilege in my life. Oh, but you had it. The fact that you don't recognize it makes you even more privileged. Like, the fuck are you talking about? We've basically convinced these people to believe things that are simply not true. And you talk, again, I'm back to, if you want a society of people that you can control, convince them that fictional things are real. And that you can decide the new real thing anytime you want to. The science has changed, even though it was settled yesterday. And now believe this, because we tell you to, like a little hypnotist. And you can't go more believing something's real that isn't real when you ask a person, is a man dressed as a woman? See, I won't even call him a trans woman, because I'm not even sure if a trans woman is a woman that looks like a man or a man that looks like a woman. I really don't. The word makes no sense. But if you say, if a man dresses like a woman, takes hormones, grows his hair out, gets boobs, does everything look like a woman, is he now a woman? They would have said, no, he's not a woman. He's a man living as a woman. And they might have been even a very progressive minded person and said, you know what? And he is free to do that if he wants to, as long as he leaves everybody else alone and he doesn't force it on you. I don't care. I think most people today, even on the far right, feel that way. If you're an adult, you live your life your way. And if you don't hurt anybody, I don't care. But when they start pushing on kids, that's where the problem comes up. But my bigger point is, you would say, that is not a woman. That is a man. Half the people in society today, possibly more, would say no. If that man decides to identify as a woman, the minute he identified as a woman, he becomes a woman. That is, and I'm not going down into the dirty level of politics with this. I'm not trying to use it to convince you to help the great Trumpkin rise again in October or November, right? Like the great pumpkin from Charlie Brown, the great Trumpkin to come back, right? An orange man shall rise. I'm just pointing this out. This is not reality. And more than, especially if you ask people under 25, I bet you more than half of them, under 25, over 18, and in the university system, I bet you 70 to 80% would say, no, that's a woman. And if you said, well, what is a woman? They actually get offended by it. Because when you convince somebody something's true that's not, and it's challenged with the most basic thing, okay, then define the thing that you say this other thing became. The brain goes in, it's just straight up cognitive dissonance. There is a conflict there that cannot be resolved, and it results in anger and huffiness and running away. Tell me we haven't seen it. You want a society easy to control? Convince them to believe things that are completely untrue are true because the person with the degree or the name or the authority said so. And then put group collective think in and the programming that comes with that. And it is. It's all by design. Lunatics are running the asylum. But they're not actually crazy. Don't lose sight of the macro goal. What is the goal? Let's talk a little bit. We'll go lightning round style through 1984. If you ever saw the movie 1984, the old one, it does look dark and dank. Like I said, the cinematography is such that you almost, by the time you're halfway through this movie, smell mildew. And your brain is conjuring up when you've smelled mildew, musty, stinky, dank things. I don't think the sun shines in a meaningful way in that movie for the entire time. Everything, if there's bright lights, it's because somebody's getting interrogated, right? There is no bright light other than bright light is actually bad. Okay, society doesn't work that way. And the earth won't turn dark and dank. This is a cinematic trick to put you in the right mindset for a movie. But the sun's still going to shine. The sky's still going to be blue. And a lot of things will look shiny. In a technological dystopia, you have advanced technology. A dystopia looks a lot more like the second version of Total Recall than it does like the 1984 old movie. Everything's bright and shiny, and there's all kinds of technology that's used to control you. And so we have been tricked to believe that we have to be in this kind of dark, dank mindset to be under tyranny, which is complete nonsense. And I don't think the book really conveys it that way either. It was something they did with cinematography when they moved into making a movie. If you read the book, I think you get a lot better understanding of what Orwell was really talking about. We also, like in the movie, there's screens all over the place, and you can't turn off the screen. You're not allowed to turn off the screen. But certain high party members have periods of time where they're able to turn off the screen, and that way they can always be beaming information into your head. You go into this room, there's a screen. When you go to your home, whatever little hellhole pod apartment you get, there's a screen. You have to leave it on all the time. We don't have that, Jack. No, we have worse. We have portable screens and people that walk around holding their screen in their face, and they are able to shut the screen off, and they have done such a magnificent job with the screen that you don't turn it off. If you don't have rules in your life for when that screen time ends, develop them. Develop them. You do not need to always be looking in a screen, including at me, okay? We also have replaced the party with the parties. There is nothing like making people believe they have a choice to make them accept misery. In 1984, the party. It's always the party. It's like the universal term to describe the people in charge. And the MO they operate on. Yeah? Well, we don't have the party, Jack. It's not the CCP. It's not the Communist Chinese Party, right? No. We got Democrats and we got Republicans. Yeah, and well, down here in Texas, we have both kinds of music, too. We have country and we have Western. You can find them both on your AM dial driving through West Texas. Country and Western. Take your pick. I would tell you that there's more of a difference between country and Western music than there is between Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill. 100%. 100%. Do you want the box of cereal with the rabbit or the pirate? It's still oversweetened corn gluten garbage. Doesn't matter which one you pick. I'll give Builder of Castles credit for that. He said it in a live chat. Do you want the pirate or do you want the bunny? So the party got replaced with the parties. We're self-editing the dictionary. If you never read the book or watched the movie, there's a dictionary. It's rather thin compared to something like Mr. Webster's. And every so often, the new dictionary comes out. They're the approved words. You can't say certain words. In fact, those words don't even exist anymore. They've been edited out. We're doing that for ourselves. Think of how many things that you would have said in the 1980s that if you say today, people lose their shit. Some of us say them anyway, like, that's retarded. People get so upset when I say that. Well, why are you upset? And maybe it's close to home. I have a cousin, a son, whatever, a brother who's special needs. Do you refer to them as retarded? No. Okay. Did I sound like I was referring to a person like that? No. Then why are you offended? Because you were trained to be offended. I don't, right now, if this is offending you, great. I'm glad. If you're struggling with it, I'm glad. I want you to think about this fully. I want you to really, because it's great that you feel that way, because now you have an opportunity to do something that you've been afraid not to do. Instead of running away from your cognitive dissonance, I want you to think about it. What do we call a person in that mental situation today that's not just doing stupid things to be stupid? Like a person that's actually special needs. We would usually refer to them as autistic or some other medical term. We do not refer to these people as being retarded at all today. If you look up the definition in the dictionary, there's several. One kind of refers to people that are mentally incompetent in some ways and can't do certain things for themselves. But it also would be like if I have a tree that I planted and it's got a disease and it's growing poorly, like it's all just kind of messed up and it's not really thriving, its growth is retarded. That is one use for the word. And retard, noun, an extremely foolish person in slang. And then it would be now, like, you know, whatever they say when they say it's a bad word you're not supposed to use. But what do we mean when we say retarded? We mean, you know, I know what was meant when it was like a parent would say it to a kid in 1985. You weren't born with an inability to think, but you're behaving like an idiot. That's what it meant. Right? And you know, if it was amongst yourselves as kids, like, you're retarded, shut up, asswipe. Like, and people just threw shit at each other and went on with life. Now we can't even say those words. And there are words we literally cannot say, or we are thrown out of society. 1984, it was all there. Orwell got more right than I think he ever even believed he would. I think Orwell, with 1984, was writing like, you know, I think it was H.G. Wells, or one of the early sci-fi writers that wrote, you know, basically forecasted or prophesied that one day we would have satellites, but said they would be made out of bricks. And so he was doing what he could with what he had. He could understand that if radio was a thing, and they knew that by then, that if you had things up in space, you could bounce signals off. So we would probably do that someday. But he didn't know what they would make it out of. And so I think that Orwell was kind of doing that, but he hit the mark way closer than somebody should have for the time that he wrote the book. So we're self-editing the dictionary, and we have an endless war that now is as much domestic as it is foreign. I'm 52 years old. I can really kind of tell you what was going on in the world from about the time I was 14 onward. So that's 40 years. In that 40 years, I can tell you there's a very, very brief window here and there of when the United States and the rest of the world was truly at peace, not at war. We've either been in a war actively or in a proxy war for almost my entire, I'm not going to say adult, but let's say cognizant of the world life. We've been at war with somebody. And if we're not at war with somebody, well, we're going to be at war with somebody. Or somebody that we like is at war with somebody we don't like at all times. The endless war was a huge part of 1984. And it's a huge part of what you live in today. And I think it's, if you've never read it or you've never watched the movie, do it. Because it will change things for you. It'll help your pattern recognition. Santos says, wasn't Orwell a communist? He was a socialist. I wouldn't say he was a full-on communist. He was a socialist. Doesn't mean he's wrong. And that's one of the things that we need to do another show on logical fallacies. Right? So somebody can identify the problem perfectly and not necessarily identify the solution perfectly. And it doesn't mean that their identification of the problem should be written off. That's actually a great way to continue the division. So this person brings up completely valid problems, and I don't like it. I'm like, I don't like that he's pointing this out. I want this to go away, and I don't want him to be taken seriously. So I got this other thing over here about this person that's legitimately negative. So then I talk about that until everybody says, well, this guy's a quack. We got to leave him alone. You know, kind of like a doctor that recommends a drug that they, under their license as a practicing physician, fully have the right to recommend. But they say this weird, stupid thing over here in a totally different place. And then you say, well, their recommendation for the drug during this, you know, scamdemic is bad because they're crazy, because they believe this thing. We all believe certain things that others don't. And in general, if you truly believe something that somebody else doesn't, especially if it's like of a religious nature, they think you're crazy. Because if they didn't think you're crazy, well, they would believe it. You're believing something that you can't possibly know. Therefore, you must be crazy. I'm not saying you are. I'm saying that's how most people think. So this, again, think about the fact these people use this and leverage it against you. So be careful when people say, you know, George Orwell is a communist. Yeah, did he get anything wrong with the problem as far as the way where things were going? No. Now, his solution would probably also lead right back to that point. Just because somebody's right about A doesn't mean they're right about B. I say that about everybody, including myself. All right, so what can we do about this? One, we need to teach children that freedom is precious and it doesn't come from the state. Freedom is not the American flag. It's not. Freedom is not a beautiful picture of the United States military in motion. Freedom is not some picture in a history book. It's not a statue. It's not a monument. Freedom lives in the heart. It can only be defined by the individual. If we started with just that basic definition of freedom and liberty being something that must come from the individual for the individual that no one can define for the individual, and its only true limitation should be when one individual is infringing upon the rights and freedoms and liberties of another individual or group of individuals. If we could start with that, you would create a massive cascade. We're not going to change society that way, but you have control over how you influence yourself and the people in your life, and that's a big place to start with that. We need our own pressure point, and that's a huge pressure point. That is one that they will lose their shit about. That is one, when you're making that case, you will be attacked for. You will be censored for on social media. That alone, that individuals have individual rights that are equal to the right of any group, because the group is only made of individuals in the first place, they will lose their mind. The closer you get to the truth, the more angry they will get. That's how you know you're over the target. They start shooting at you. There was that girl from Trump's campaign that was on CNN yesterday, and she was pointing out that the moderators in the debate have said horrible things about Trump, like he's equal to Hitler and all, and the Karen interviewer just shuts her off and throws her off the air. When you cut out a person's tongue, you do not prove them a liar. You only show that you fear what they have to say. No matter what else, and again, think back about, you know, attacking. It's basically fallacy ad hominem. You can tell me anything you want about Trump. You can tell me anything you want about that girl. I know nothing about her. I know she's blonde and kind of pretty. That's it. Okay? But the point she was making was valid. And it doesn't matter where she was wrong. That point was valid. And until you can understand that, you're, and I see it in you guys all the time. That's what I'm hitting on a little bit here. I see it on social. I'll post a thing, and all you want to do is, Trump sucks. Never said he didn't. I'm saying this thing. Let's discuss this thing. Let's stop having red herring fallacies, right? The red herring apparently is delicious with a side of ad hominem. A red herring is where we change the discussion, and ad hominem is where we attack the source instead of the argument. You want to control a society, get them living on, like, we live on logical fallacies like a suckling pig lives on pig's milk. We really do. We need to teach our kids skills so they can adapt when others fail. If a person can see a path to success for themselves, they stop asking somebody else to give it to them. When you take away hope, it leads to despair, and despair leads to two places, death or dependency. Okay? That's where it leaves. If you take away hope for the future, you get the three D's, despair, and despair bifurcates into death or dependency. Either people take such a horrible path, they end up overdosed on drugs and they die young in the street. Even if they don't die directly of an overdose, they destroy their health, they destroy their lives, they end up cold one night or hot one day, and they end up dead on the streets. And somewhere in between is possible, but somewhere in the way, you take away hope, it leads on a path toward personal destruction and eventual death. Or it leads to dependency. Hands out. I can't make it without you. What's the first thing a pimp does when he brings a new girl into the stable? Gets her hooked on drugs and money and nice stuff, slaps her around and says, but without me, what would you have? It's exactly how the government, that's exactly how the propaganda machine treats you. Same way. So we need skills. And if you have a person that is skilled in many things, they can always find some way forward. And so they always have hope. And since they always have hope, they don't end up in despair. They don't end up dependent or dead. So it's incredibly important we start restoring the ability of people to do things. You know, I've said recently, and I always say I'm not picking on these kids, but pull the average 15-year-old off the street, tell them to start a lawnmower today. Can't do it. Hand them a spark plug wrench and a spark plug and say, change the spark plug in that thing. Can't do it. Now, a good half of them are going to go, hold on a minute, and they're going to get on YouTube on their phone, and they're going to be able to do it. They're the ones that if your kid can't, your kid will work for them someday. That's what you have to teach kids today, not just how to do things, but the mindset. Of anything anybody else can do, you can do. Now, common sense understanding of risk, right? Some people can perform a heart transplant. You're probably not going to learn how to do that on YouTube, right? But changing a spark plug for a lawnmower, or how to start a lawnmower, how to put gas in a lawnmower, where the fucking oil goes. Like, did you see the video recently with the woman said, I don't need a man, and she's dumping windshield washer fluid into her crankcase of her motor. Like, you could have checked that, right? You don't have to know the answer. You just have to know that it's possible to gain the answer and have enough humility to admit what you don't know and not try to look like you're smart and prove that you're stupid. They give access to anything. So we need to teach people how to do things, but also how to learn and how to self-educate on how to do things. Because then they will never fall into that path of despair and either death or dependency. Because that's where you will end up. We also need to help define what freedom is for them and stop dictating it to them. And I think we need to do a better job than maybe our parents did. Because I think they almost gave us too much freedom in this regard. And this is what I mean. I was always told, Jack, and it was usually after I'd done something wrong or stupid and wrong, Jack, you're such a smart young man. You can be anything you want. You can do anything you want. With no follow-up onto what that meant. And that's like trying to arrange furniture in a giant building with no walls. You have no restrictions, no concepts. Where's the kitchen? Where does the living room go? So I know where to even start thinking. You see what I'm saying? Like, and as soon as you put walls in a house, you kind of walk in and go, well, that's kitchen. How do you know? There's a stove in there, right? Some drawers and shit, some cabinets. I've seen kitchens before. That's probably the living room. There's a window on that wall. Certain things I'm not going to do with it. There's a fireplace there. Certain things I'm not going to do there. All of a sudden, you can arrange your house really easily because you have some guidelines, some borders, some restrictions. And I think so, just like in permaculture, where the original, the first design restrictions are the ethics and the prime directive, in this world, the first restriction, when you tell a kid that they can define freedom and be anything they want, but you can't hurt other people. At least now we have a wall. At least now we have like a building. Like maybe we don't have the interior rooms defined, but and then they can start designing this for themselves. And I think giving them some guidance and understanding things like I used to be told, well, you know, you might want to be an engineer someday, so you better take math seriously. And I'm like, I'm not going to be a fucking engineer. Because they gave me a thing and they said, do good at this because this, and I might want to do that. I'm like, I don't ever want to do that. I already know I don't want to do that. What I tell my grandson is slightly different today. I admit you do not know what you want to do. And at some point you may want, there's a thousand reasons that you may come back to needing a foundation in this basic knowledge. And if you get to that point and you're going to make that decision to go in that direction, I want you to not have to back up to where you should have been when you were 14, when you're 24 to get there. I wish somebody would have gave me an answer like that because I probably would have took certain things in my life a little bit more seriously if somebody did. But we have to help them define what freedom is for them. And that starts with a definition. It's the ability to do what you want as long as you don't hurt the other people around you's ability to do what they want. Think of how much woke nonsense goes away. Think about things like, you're on this college campus, you're this young upstart left-wing lunatic kid, your mom is just a perfect, rich, spoiled white Karen from suburbs. Full-on soccer mom, but her soccer mom rolls around in a loaded Lexus. Right? Something like that. And so you're all in on this, but you do believe that one thing. You believe that one thing, that freedom is the ability to do what you want till you harm what somebody else wants. And they send one of these right-wing talking heads to your college to give a talk on subject XYZ that you find abhorrent. But you have one limitation. Some of my classmates like this guy. They're not hurting me. They want to go to this auditorium and listen to him. There's only one thing I'm required to do, not interfere with their ability to hear him or his ability to be heard. If they're going to pump it into my head when I don't want it, that's a problem. But if all I have to do is not go to some lecture hall after hours that I probably never would have went there. It's not like I had a plan to go there and have a picnic in the middle of the auditorium floor. Then I, whether I like it or not, it's not my business. How much is destroyed of this entire woke agenda, if you can get that far? The right to be left alone. And only through acknowledging the right to be left alone and claiming the right to left alone can you find your freedom and define freedom for yourself. We need to guide our kids that way. We need to encourage independent learning and systems thinking. Even when they get the right answer, let's go back and figure out how you would get there if you didn't know what you knew. I do that, my grandson rolls his eyes. He gets so pissed. How do you know? Well, am I right? And I'll even tell him, you are absolutely right, buddy. You got the right answer, but you can't tell me how you got the right answer. So let's show the work, like they used to tell you in algebra, right? Let's show the work. Let's figure out how this all relates to each other. Why do you know this? That's a big part of, like, systems thinking is exactly what I said earlier about techniques and tactics being useful until you define strategy. You have to start, well, what is the overriding macro goal? We have to get this into the minds of our youth because we're going to rely on them a lot. And if you're Gen X and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm Gen X, and we can still do shit, I can still lift weights, I can still, like, dig holes. I can't do it the way I did when I was 30, but I can still work. I can still get shit done. 40 to 50 went like that. I'm 52. 62 is going to be like that. I understand that. And that will continue to decline on my ability to do shit. And this generation is going to be the one that we're going to rely on. We might want to start taking a little bit more interest in helping them get where they want to be on their own without stealing from others. Because they are stealing from others by proxy through the state because it's what they've been educated and taught to do. And many of them are being taught to do it by people our age. I have guys I went to school with, they think paying off student loans like by the government is bad, but they want it anyway because their kids are in debt. And tell their kids, go get that money. It's not new. When I was a kid, one of my first jobs, I worked for a guy named Muskrat Purcell. He ran a junkyard. I ride my bike to Muskrats. Saturdays is when I did most of my work. I got paid piecework. That meant for every part I pulled, I got paid. I would go there. He usually wasn't there. I had a key. I'd go in the office. There was a drawer. In that drawer was two things, a list and an envelope full of money. The money was from last week's work. Take the money, take the list. It would tell me what to pull, what bin to put it in, and where the car was that had it on it. I went out and pulled all the parts, put them in the bins. I checked them off the list. I put the list back in the drawer. I locked the door and I left. And next week I got paid, right? That gave me so much of an advantage in the future. I was able to actually plan things out for myself, think about them, get them done. I lost train of thought there for a second. But you have to think at a higher level to be able to do something like that at that age, to be entrusted with that kind of responsibility and make it happen. Anyway, you want to encourage that independent learning and systems thinking. You also need to teach them something else, though, that failure is good. Anything short of catastrophic failure is okay, right? Like failure trying to climb a rock wall with no ropes, you know, once you're over a certain height, it's going to result in either permanent injury or death. That's bad. You should avoid that. You should take precautions in that situation. But literally, we have like terrified of failure. Giving the wrong answer is terrifying, let alone getting something actually wrong. Failure is the means to success. So we need to be teaching young people how to mitigate their failures, not how to avoid them. How do we fail up? How do we set things up so if this doesn't work, I failed, but it's not really that big a deal, and I learned something, and now I know what to do next, right? If I fail and I fall 2 feet in the grass, I'm probably good. If I fell 20 feet into a parking lot, I'm probably dead. And we need to explain the difference, and like, here's where you start to actually be a little bit careful. Here's where you don't go. And here's where you just fucking do it and see what happens. And 90% of the shit that people do not do because they're afraid to do is in that part that you should just do and get done with. If I waited until things were perfect before I started the survival podcast that's now 16 years old, it wouldn't exist yet. Go listen to episode 1. It was far from perfect. Failure is necessary to succeed. And we need to instill in them the spirit of insurrection. The absolute spirit of insurrection. And I've talked about this before. A revolution is where a group of people rise up, seize power, and hand it to a new leader. That's revolution. They usually don't change. Most revolutions in history, the American Revolution worked out fairly well. If you go back and track revolutions throughout history, most revolutions were out of the frying pan into the fryer scenarios. And even if things eventually got better, the initial transition was bad. Ask a Frenchman about his history if you want to know what I'm talking about, right? Like, traditionally, revolutions don't work out very well. An insurrection is seizing of power, period, for yourself. It's taking power away from the power apparatus, empowering the individual, and going on with life. It is not cutting out ass cancer and replacing it with face cancer. That's what the spirit of revolution has turned into. We're going to have a political revolution, a nonviolent political revolution. We're going to excise this tumor and replace it with that tumor. When a surgeon, if this surgeon ever removes a malignant tumor from me, I want it replaced with nothing. I want it replaced with nothing. And that's what insurrection thinking is taking power away from government and not replacing it with something else. Right? I don't want to replace the income tax with a sales tax. I don't want to replace the income tax with a tariff system. The second one, I would actually make the deal, but it's not what I want. I want to eliminate the tax and replace it with nothing. I think the government has plenty of money for roads and schools without an income tax. Like, you could just get rid of it. Yes, you would have to downsize government by 30%. What's your problem? I promise you we can do it. Elon Musk laid off 85% of the people at Twitter. Everything still works. I have a funny feeling we could find easily a third to two-thirds of people in the federal government and most state governments that you could get rid of. And on average, nothing would really change in people's lives for the negative, other than the people that got fired. They'd have to go find something productive to do. My last question, and this is a question I have more for you guys, and then I'm going to hit a few talking points. Is there any hope? Is there any hope? Regardless of where you fall on the demographer's definition, if you're alive now, you're part of what I call the last free generation. I don't care if you're 12. I don't care if you're 82. You're part of us. We have to stop this shit. Like, I'll use these generational lines like Z, Alpha, X, Boomer, right? Because they're useful for discussion. But in reality, they're also divisive, right? There are certain differences in the mindset of a person who was born in 1972 and a person that was born in 2002. Beyond just life experience, it's temporal experience. So it's not just like if we all had, like, if I die right now, something happens, the house falls on my head, and I die at 52, and you are 22. The day you turn 52, we're equal on macro life experience. But you never experienced the time frame that I did. You'll never live in a time frame that looks like when they started that show. What's that show on Netflix with the kids in the 80s on their bikes? And it's like a sci-fi show. I can't think of what it's called now. The Upside Down and what have you. Whatever that show is. And somebody will say here in a second. I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's it. Like, you never had that life. You might look at movies and TV shows about that where all the kids just jumped on their bike and hauled ass all day long and there were no adults anywhere. And I bet you Stranger Things, that's what it's called. Like, that really is how we lived. It's not like the whole Stranger Things bullshit isn't, but the kids in control of their own life, living, they lived that way. Moving forward, no one that's not experienced that is going to experience it unless we recreate it. Is it possible? Is it possible? Or are we the last free generation? Throw your answers in there and put answer in all caps, and I'll come back and see if there's any that we can read with that. Are we the last free generation? Exodus Survival, is there a way to connect with TSPers in my local area? I am in MSB, if that helps. The MSB part does not help with that. Because the MSB is a minority of the audience. If I made something like that just for, it would not work as well because it would lack network effect. The best place really to connect, I would say the best two places to connect with people in this community is the Telegram group and the Discord server. Both of those are great ways to connect to people. And what you may find is that you may not directly connect, but when you connect well enough, somebody may connect you with somebody else that they know that doesn't use that medium. Because our really active people, that's the places that are most active. I'll also say, you know, your name's Access Survival, you look branded, and if you just run in there and start talking about, you know, I want to connect with people and all, you're probably not, like, social media in general, when you get into community level, right? We're not talking, you know, Noster or Twitter or Facebook or whatever, where you're just generally shitposting or whatever. Like, when you get into things where it's actually drilled down into a community, like a Facebook community or a Telegram group, you should walk in there like you would walk into a bar for the first time. It's a very social bar, and you're alone. You don't start telling everybody, you know, what to do and what you want to happen. You kind of make friends and things like that, and you lead with the relationship, and you'll do better that way. But that's the best way to find people. And maybe running some sort of local event, inviting people, doing something really simple and free. Because one thing I found about TSPers, they're always in for that. And sometimes, Jimmy, you don't even run the event. Like, I haven't been going, and my wife and I really should start going again. There's a great Fort Worth Bitcoin meetup group that we go to. And probably most of them I go to, like half the people that are there are from the TSP audience for me promoting on social media, and they also happen to be local. So you could even tie into something else, possibly. The Santos Live says, could sexual liberation be used for political control? Of course it is. Just like racism was used for political control. You take a problem that exists, but when you want to sell something, here's an old sales lesson. You want to sell something, the formula is called cash. That's how you sell, the cash formula. You want the cash formula? It's the number one sales formula used in the world. Even people that don't know that that's what they're doing, a lot of times it's what they're doing. Create, agitate, solve, help. Cash. You create a problem. Often we don't create a problem, as in there is no problem when we literally create it. So I'm selling you a vacuum cleaner, right? The problem is your floor is dirty. Even if you vacuum it, my vacuum cleaner is better, your floor is dirty. I'll prove it to you. I'll do something that shows you how dirty your floor is. How do I know your floor is dirty? Everybody's floor, especially carpet, is dirty. Dirtier than you think, right? So I'll create the problem. Then I'll agitate the problem. I'll explain to you that you have dust mites, flea eggs from your dog and other things, and your children, look at them sitting in front, agitate the problem. Solve the problem. My super whiz bang vacuum cleaner will fix your rug and clean it. Help, we have easy financing. That's exactly what they do to manipulate you politically. You take a problem, women are paid lower in the workforce. Today, that is completely and patently untrue when judged for the same work. Okay? When you judge people, women actually earn more than men if they're doing the same job at the same level, working the same amount of hours. Women tend to out-earn men in that situation. Do you know what? It was completely true in the 1970s. It was completely true. It wasn't as true as they said it was, because a lot of it was that less women worked. It was a lot of it is the same thing today, only more so that they didn't go into engineering and STEM and other things that are higher paying jobs. But some of it was systemic. You were less likely, even if you were really good, to become a supervisor as a woman than a man. Even if you did everything. So you take the problem that actually exists, you agitate it, make it look worse than it is. And when the problem actually is mostly gone, you continue to agitate it, create it, and regurgitate it. Racism, sexism, all of it, of course. Or people are suppressed because they're gay. Nobody's suppressed because they're gay today in any meaningful way. Not in entertainment, not in business, it's just not a thing. No one gives a rip. In fact, it might be an advantage to be gay today. Okay? It might be. But people are limiting their ability to move forward if they're freaks in many situations. Like if you're a dude that dresses in a leather dog suit and wears dresses while you steal people's luggage at the airport and you look like a total freak, you might not end up completely in charge of disposing of America's nuclear waste, even though you have no degree in nuclear waste or no experience with it. You won't get that. Oh, wait, that guy did get that job. But I will give it to you. It's the exception. So what will happen is some of these people that are complete freaks and the way they look, the way they dress, et cetera. They can't get a job that says you can't look like that here. We have a dress code. And they say it's about my sexual orientation. No, it's about you being a freak. I'm sorry. But yes, exactly what's done. Real problems aggravated and agitated beyond what they are. Then the state gives you the solution to move the political compass in the direction they want it to go, which is always more and more power for the state. Who in government really wants government to have less power? You'll say plenty of people say that. Yep. Okay. But try this. Talk to a government employee that agrees with you. Yes, the government's too big. Well, what about what you do? What if we could cut government by 30%, but it would mean you lost your job, and watch how quickly they justify their existence to you. Glass Gatto, totally off topic. Then we will see if I answer it, because I usually don't. Growing up in Jacksonville, did you ever run around with a dude named Tommy Skinner? He is around your age. No. Now, Jacksonville is a huge place. Don't know that name at all, but it's an easy one to answer, so I went ahead and did it. So as I said, guys, you got to put the question in all caps for me or I won't see it. I didn't see it. I would probably answer that one on a fly if I would have saw it. I just clicked it because I saw the all caps. Can you have freedom without freedom of association and preference? No. No, you can't. You have to have freedom of association and preference, but you can't get in the way of other people's freedom of association and preference. So that's what I was talking about with the college scenario where, you know, this guy's coming in to talk about this subject and the students all want to shut it down. You're interfering with freedom of association and preference. These people want to go listen to what's his name that always does that. Charlie Kirk or the other guy, the annoying one, Ben Shapiro, right? That dude's annoying as shit. But if you want to go listen to him, go listen to him. If you want to get together as a bunch of gay people, you do that. It doesn't mean you need to walk down a public street with your junk swinging around in front of a kid. That's not freedom of association and preference. That is infringing on the rights of others because either it's okay for a grown man to walk around naked in downtown Fort Worth or it isn't. Marching in a parade doesn't change that. We have to have whatever our rules are, whatever our rules are going to have, they should be the same for everybody. What's the Discord name? K-Bonk? What I'll tell you is if you go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on Get Social, you can see all the social connections, including there's a link there that'll take you where you can join the Discord. But it's the Survival Podcast. That's the Discord name. I'm looking to see if there's any answers to my question. I don't see any. I guess it's a tough question. Okay, I got one answer to it. Roger T says, the price for freedom is eternal vigilance. The problem is most people don't have that level of conviction. I would agree. And I'm going to say something here that doesn't really apply to Roger. Catchphrases are generally poor arguments. He actually gave one that's a great argument. Because it's not an argument that you must agree to this thing that we're doing. But, you know, examples of catchphrases being used as logical arguments when they aren't is when you oppose a war and somebody says, freedom isn't free. Okay. That's probably true, but this is a very complex situation with two nations fighting, none of which border ours. We really don't have a vested interest in this. I can't see how my son benefits or my grandson benefits by being drafted and sent to war in this place. And your whole argument is freedom isn't free? What freedom? Whose freedom? What's going on there? What is the history of this place? But see, where catchphrases work or slogans work is more overriding philosophical. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. In other words, if you want liberty, you have to defend it for yourself. What was one of my talking points? What was one of my bullet points? That what we have done to people, right, is we have taught them to value protection over vigilance. Protection over vigilance. That's the Santos. His icon makes me think of Charles for some reason. It doesn't look nothing like it, though. Question, does Civil Rights Act fundamentally ruin freedom of association and freedom of preference? That's a bigger question than I have time for. Overall, I would say no. There may be a piece or two of it that are unnecessary at this point. I will point out that every single Democrat that voted in Congress voted against it. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, history ain't what you've been taught. Anyway, guys, I'm ready to wrap things up. I want to remind you today that you can always support us by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. My item of the day for you today is from Vavor, and I'm kind of excited about this one. They have a 37-pound, and that's not how much it weighs, that's how much it makes a day, a 24-hour period, countertop ice maker. And it is on a super great sale today. Long ago, I brought you guys the Frigidaire one. I actually have two of those. I like it for what it is, but it has some limitations. This thing is an upgrade and a half times five. It makes ice like crazy. Once it starts going, it just keeps spitting it out. It's like this continuous thing. I did a video, explained it all. But what I love about it, it makes pelletized ice. Like the ice at a convenience store where you put your cup under it and you can chew on it and it doesn't break your teeth. It makes ice like that. Tons of little pellets. And it's normally sells for about $290. It is on sale today. Let me get the price exactly right here for you. For $170. 43% off. And it is just an awesome deal. And if you use my discount code that you get along with the write-up, it is you get an extra 5% off. So it's really like a 48% discount. I have a write-up on it. I have a video on it. It's awesome. It is better in every way imaginable from the Frigidaire. Mainly because it holds ice better, so it's less that you have to empty it and throw it into like your regular freezer or whatever. You just leave it, keep running, keep adding some water to the reservoir, and it keeps recirculating the water. Again, the video I did today really explains it well. I don't know how long this is going to be on sale. I only even have this item because my rep from Vavor, she's awesome. And certain things she gives me a heads up. She's like, this thing's going on sale. I think it's going to do well for preppers. I'm like, yeah, we can sell ice machines. Let's go. Let's get one of these out here. So I have a review of it for you. And preppers, you guys should have ice machines. You should. Because it takes a lot less energy to make ice than keep your freezer cold. And ice can help keep your freezer cold. It also can bail out your neighbors. With a little like sportsman's guide generator. With a good inverter for a car. You can make ice, and if you can make ice, you can keep things cold, and that is incredibly valuable. As a lifestyle thing, it's awesome as well from a monetary standpoint. I bought a bag of ice for one reason or another the other day, and it was like $4 for an 8-pound bag of ice. I can make 3.5 bags a day for free, basically. So if you use a lot of bagged ice and all, one of the things you can do, you can go on Amazon and you can buy, and I put a link in the write-up, you can buy like 100 ice bags, 110-pound ice bags, 100 bags for ice that hold 10 pounds each. I realize that sounds clunky, right? Okay, for $15. So if you can do that, then you can just stockpile your freezer with as much of this stuff as you want. And again, I love the ice. My granddaughter loves it. She eats it like candy. That's better than any candy. Check it out. Remember, you can always find everything I recommend at tspaz.com. With that, I will sign off. Thank you for tuning in today, everyone. Tomorrow we'll have an interview, but I don't remember who it is. So we'll find out tomorrow together. Take care. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.